from the NHL on NBC. And on Sunday night in beautiful Green Bay, Wisconsin, she worked the sidelines for Sunday Night Football, the Bears-Packers matchup. We welcome to the program Catherine Tappan. Catherine, good morning. How are you?
Hey, hi. Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's wonderful to have you on. So let's start with the experience. You know, I would imagine that there are, we've all had them, if we work in this industry, some wow moments. The opportunity not just to work Sunday Night Football, but to do so at Lambeau Field must have been a real cool moment in your career.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. It's funny because I just remember in college, I mean, I wanted to do this my whole life, what I'm doing. I'm just blessed to be living my dream job. But I remember in college watching Sunday Night Football and just thinking, like, that's where I got to be. You know, I mean, it's the biggest show in television, in all of television, news, entertainment, sports, you name it. And all eyeballs are on there on Sunday night. And then you're right, to be at Lambeau. I mean, it's interesting because I've covered plenty of football games before. I was a beat reporter for the Patriots for years when I worked at NESN, and I've covered a couple Super Bowls for NBC doing pregame and postgame interviews, but never during the game and on the sidelines. And so being at Lambeau, it was a little bit surreal. I'd been there before for Football Night in America, and, you know, Lambeau, especially Bears Packers, forget it. It's the coolest atmosphere in the world. You know, the surrounding areas around Lambeau is really unique because all the neighborhoods come together and people, you know, sell $10 to park your car on their lawn, and they pack their lawn and they get money for that, and that pays their property taxes throughout the year. So it's a really neat environment when you're driving into Lambeau. It not only looks cool, it smells cool. I mean, you smell all the brats cooking on the grills, and it's just an experience. Sunday was weird. I mean, they said they were allowing 500 fans. I'd be shocked if there were 50 fans in there. And it just felt so different. And it's a sign of the times, obviously, but a very different, unique way to cover the game for sure. But the actual, I mean, once that ball was kicked and the opening kickoff, I mean, it's a game. But it was definitely a different experience being at Lambeau in those conditions.
Where would you rank that for events that you've gotten to cover, you know, NHL, Olympics, college football?
Yeah, I mean, it's at the top. It's there's nothing like it. It's like I said before. I mean, it's almost, you know, it's almost weird to think I even did it looking back. And I know the week, I'd say like 2 weeks beforehand, I was really nervous. And then once I started to put my preparation in, and you guys know this, I mean, then it just becomes, okay, you're putting in the right wheels in motion. You've got your preparation. You've talked to the players. I've done everything I need to do, everything I usually do for a college football game. I'm doing it right now. So it's kind of the nerves went down, and then it became more excitement. And I really had time on Sunday. I was laughing because I'm like, this is such a long day to wait for kickoff. Like, I wanted to kick off at 8 a.m. I was ready to go. But you know, I had time to reflect. You know, we were in these hotel rooms. We can't do what we usually do on the road, gather with our, you know, teammates and have breakfast together or have meetings together and dinners together. I mean, you're isolated when you're on the road right now. And so I had a lot of time to think. I called my little godchildren to try and like distract me and talk to them. And, you know, they're 5 and 3, and they were just so funny and could care less what I was doing that night. So they just wanted to talk to me, which really those things kind of help calm your nerves, but it's at the top of what I've done. I mean, I always wanted to cover an Olympics, and I was about to go into my fourth one this year in Tokyo. And I would say the Olympics are really, I mean, that's a career defining assignment. And, you know, you can only do it on NBC. So the fact that I work for NBC and I've had the opportunity to do the Olympics was huge for me in years past. And now to add Sunday Night Football sidelines to the list of opportunities, it's definitely at the top for sure.
With Catherine Tappan of NBC Sports on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm interested, Catherine, in preparation for the Olympics, because, I mean, I think we would all acknowledge that a lot of Olympic sports are sports with which we're not entirely familiar. So you're almost going in, you know, as a baby and growing with the program, talking to the athletes, talking to the coaches, et cetera, et cetera. How did you prepare for the three Olympics you've been able to cover so far?
Yeah, it's really, the Olympics are, like you said, it's different in the sense that you don't know these athletes every day. I mean, we're used to hearing, you know, household names in the NHL and the NFL and Major League Baseball in North America. We hear them all the time and we watch, you know, there's a million different sports programs on TV every day that you can catch up on sports. So with the Olympics, it's a matter of staying current, you know, once the teams are set. So you can prepare all you want in years in advance, which I stay current by following a lot of athletes on Instagram. You know, I follow Michaela Schifrin, I'm following Kerry Walsh Jennings, I'm following a lot of the athletes that we know are likely going to be there. But it's the unknowns. It's the ones that qualify at the last minute, you know, and then 2 weeks later, boom, they're competing at the Olympics, which those are the ones that you really, it's a crash course. So luckily the Olympics I've covered, there have been very long flights to get there. Cause we get a research packet that is, I mean, carrying this thing to Sochi, it was like, I mean, people were making fun of me on the plane. I remember I was on Team USA's hockey team flight going over to Sochi, and I had this massive binder, you guys. It was like 6 inches thick and it weighed a ton. And I'm trying to go through all these sports and, you know, it didn't even fit in my backpack. I looked like I was, you know, studying, I don't even know what, but it was, you know, that's what you have to do. And you've got to cram. It's almost like it's studying for a test at the last minute, because a lot of these athletes, you don't know who they are until you get there. Hockey was really challenging in South Korea because we didn't have NHL players. So, I mean, I remember, first of all, pronouncing the names of half the players that were there was difficult. And then, you know, not knowing their tendencies. It's very easy for us to be able to broadcast, you know, NHL guys that are playing in the Olympics because we see them every night. So that was definitely a steep learning curve. But you go to the practices, you go to the availability that they allow you to. When I did beach volleyball in Rio, I got there about a week early. So got to do my research on Copacabana Beach every morning. It was not a terrible assignment.
That's nice.
It was, you know, you stand by the fences. They give you a little bit of time with each athlete, you know, in the morning right after their practices. And you just ask personal stories. And for me, that's a big thing, is learning them. I don't need to know, you know, my analyst is going to tell you all the analyticals of what they're doing right or wrong on the, you know, on the sand, but I need to know more about their story and their background, because that's why people tune into the Olympics. They want to know the stories of these athletes. So you really, what I find rewarding though, is that they're so willing to talk to you. You know, it's very different when you cover professional sports. Some days somebody might not want to talk to you and you just have to accept that. But Olympic athletes, for the most part, this is their moment to shine. And it may be the first and last time they have an opportunity to do that. So they're very willing to open up to you and share their story. They know mom and dad and cousins and aunts and uncles back home are going to be watching. So that is refreshing when, you know, you have somebody that really wants to share those details with you.
So big milestone day for in the U.S. and in Canada, all female crews covering the Flames and Knights and Blues and Blackhawks. When do you think this is not going to be, I guess, headline news? When will we see more women covering sports?
Well, I think we are not there yet. I love that we had that day, but I hated that it was a day. And, you know, it was nice to get the attention. I'm glad everybody received the attention they deserve, because every single one of us, from on camera to behind the scenes, this is what we do for a living. This isn't like, hey, NBC called, you know, some random person from the street to say, do you want to broadcast the hockey? I mean, this is what we do every single day. So to bring us all together on one broadcast was really neat. But these are, you know, everybody puts in hard work to do their jobs. So I don't think we're there yet. You know, I think that there's still a steep divide. I think that this pandemic probably didn't help either. So I'm hoping that just women's sports in general, I mean, that from the athletes to the broadcasters to women working for the teams, I hope it continues to trend upwards. Unfortunately, a lot of people have lost their jobs over the last year, and a lot of people, you know, a lot of companies have reduced their footprint of production teams and people covering sports and broadcasting sports. So I'm hoping that doesn't affect where we were headed, because I thought we were going in a very good direction. But we're not quite where we need to be. And, you know, it's also a matter of male or female. You have to be able to do the job. And I don't think anybody should be rewarded just for the color of their skin or their gender or whatever they might be. I mean, you've got to earn it. And, you know, you've got to pay your dues and do it the hard way. I mean, I can think of times back in Providence, Rhode Island, working for local TV where it was a struggle. There were so many things I didn't know how to do, and there's still things I don't get right that I've got to work on. So that hard work, though, pays off. I mean, you don't get to Sunday Night Football just getting there because I'm a female and they just needed that, you know, quota for the night. And so I encourage that more than anything else. And I think the more women put in the work to do it, then we're going to start seeing a lot more women because they're qualified. I mean, look at Kendall Coyne Schofield just got that incredible job with the Blackhawks, and Kenny Granato is working for Seattle, and because they are qualified individuals that know their stuff. So it comes down to that. And I think the more and more women that feel confident by seeing someone like Cammy or seeing someone like Kendall, or if they see me and want to do what I do, great. Then they know they can, if they see it, they can believe it and they can do it. Right. And that's the biggest thing.
I mean, we've got a wonderful, now retired Canadian hockey player here. You would know well, Catherine Haley Wickenheiser, who's working for the Toronto, working for the Toronto Maple Leafs in the morning and pulling all nighter shifts at the hospital as she works toward becoming a doctor at night. It's incredible. Yeah.
I will say this, and I do believe women take a lot on their plates, and the women that can do it. I mean, you look at Haley's a perfect example. I mean, and I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's a motherly instinct, if it's just kind of at our core of who we are, but we take a lot on, those of us that want to work hard and want the challenges. And I mean, Haley I just can't get over what her schedule is like and what she does for a living and how she's able to do it. And she does it with pride and with a smile on her face, and she's not bashful about it. I mean, she's proud and she deserves to be, because what she does is remarkable work in the community and in the hospital, and it's benefiting lives. You know, I do often think for myself, you know, I love what I do and I think it's great, and we're in the entertainment business, but sometimes you don't feel quite fulfilled because you want to be able to do more and you want to be able to help people. And that's what Haley's doing every single day. So, I think women are capable and more than capable of taking on a lot of responsibilities at once. And I hope that by seeing people like Haley, young women are encouraged that they can do it too.
With Catherine Tappan of the NHL on NBC, NBC Sports, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I just want to take your comment about merit a little bit earlier, a step further, Catherine, and get your perspective on this. I mean, I think you, Ziggy, me, we all would agree that a meritorious society is the best society, but the issue is actually on the front end of that, which is equality of opportunity. And it's not just that one receives the same consideration on merit as another. It's that one is not expected to compromise the self in any of a number of ways in order to achieve. How close do you think we are to the equality of opportunity? Because I've often used the example of Usain Bolt. He's the fastest runner in the world. But if I'm running a 100-meter race against Usain Bolt and he's got to start 100 meters back and I'm starting 5 meters from the finish line, I'm going to win regardless of his speed. Right? So it's a quality of opportunity. How close are we to that?
Well, I'd like to hope we are close. I think it comes from within. I think people have to reflect on how they want to treat others, but also how they want to be treated themselves. And, you know, I just actually recently was asked, I was interviewed for a podcast, and the person who interviewed me said, you know, how did you become the personality you are on TV? Like, you're so kind and your interviewing skills are great, but like, how did you develop that personality? And I was really quite surprised. I said, I mean, I didn't develop a personality. This is who I am. And I'm proud of who I am, and I'm different than the next person. You know, I'm not Michelle Pafoya. I'm not Liam McHugh. I'm not my colleagues. I'm me. And I encourage this person to be themselves. The person was a little defeated because they said to me, I feel like my personality comes off really harsh and sometimes people don't want to talk to me. And I said, well, you got to find a way to work with that then. Find a way to work with it. Because you're your own individual self. You can't manufacture someone different. And so when you're yourself, you will find the opportunities that are best for you. And I hope that a lot more doors are opening for people of all different kinds, because everyone deserves an opportunity. But again, it goes back to digging within yourself and finding what makes you tick, what makes you work hard and believing in yourself, and then networking and getting out. You know, you've got to find a way to put yourself out there. You can't just assume that the dream job is going to fall from the sky and they're going to come knocking on your door. You got to go get it. And that's a really important thing as well. And I hope that by other people getting opportunities, and you talk about, you know, having a level playing field and getting those opportunities and achieving them on merit, based on merit. I hope that more and more we see this, then the more and more people will be encouraged to be themselves and encouraged to work hard and fight for their dream.
With Catherine Tappan, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about the experience covering the great New England Patriots for the 7 years that you did, and for your insight into the dynamic now as Bill Belichick tries to push through with a team that 11 games into its NFL season is under 500 at 5-6, and with some rumblings from down in Tampa Bay that the waters aren't necessarily smooth between Tom Brady and Bruce Arians. What do you make of all of it?
Well, I make of all of it is that it's a lot of chatter and probably not a lot of truth. I've covering the Patriots for so long, you learn so much. I think I learned a lot about covering sports in general, just being in that Wednesday press conference with Bill Belichick every week and not being able to get a lick of information from him. And you find other ways to get it. There's always been, for years, there's been reports about, highs and lows between Belichick and Brady and Kraft and Belichick. And I mean, it's always rumbling because that's what media does. And you've got to find stories. But Tom Brady's the very best. He's the best of the best. And this is a learning experience. I mean, you don't go into a new team and expect to win a Super Bowl. You just don't. And he's got different weapons around him. And of course, there's going to be frustrations. He's a complete perfectionist. And he's, you know, this is the way he was in New England, too, when they were a dynasty and they were winning every game every week. And he still found a way to find something that needed to be worked on. So, Belichick has his hands full with a new team, with a totally new quarterback, with a different operating system, and he functions totally different than Tom Brady. And sometimes he doesn't function well at all. And sometimes he's out with COVID. And I mean, these are the challenges that Belichick has to navigate through with a whole new dynamic with his team. And then Brady has to do the same thing in Tampa. So anybody that expected either one of these two teams to have, you know, just come out of the gates running and be successful this season, I think you would have been fooled. And add in all the challenges that everybody's dealing with right now with, you know, players are in and out any given week. I mean, you don't even look at the Ravens. I mean, look at the Broncos last week with no quarterback. I mean, that's unbelievable. So you can't expect it this year, but I think the rift between Brady and Arians is nowhere near what it is being portrayed to be. I think behind closed doors, they're two pros. They're two of the best to do what they do. I mean, Bruce Arians is an incredible coach, and I think Brady has a lot of respect for him. So you'll see it turn around. I mean, it's a lot of chatter, and I don't know. Sometimes it's a lot of noise.
I have to ask you about,
I don't know if that's running, what you want to hear. Are you guys Patriots fans?
Well, we're here for the drama.
Yeah.
We got to compare Brady and Belichick from now until the rest of our lives, Catherine. I mean, that's the truth of the matter,
true.
Right?
Yeah, it's the best.
Better you than me.
Yes.
You're going to have some rough mornings.
I got to ask you about college and running the steeplechase, because me and Scotty are always trying to figure out who's better in what different areas of athleticism. And me and him had a hit off this year trying to hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. Do you think me and Scotty could actually get over the big hurdle and get over the water
without
no chance,
without a hernia or a torn quad or hammy?
No chance. I don't think I can get over the hurdles at this point in my life. I think it's funny that people bring that up a lot, because it is a really unique event, and they introduced it my sophomore year in college. Men's college running, Division I, was running the steeplechase at the time, and then they introduced it for women's running. And my coach, you know, I was an intermediate hurdler in high school, and I was a distance runner in college, so she said, oh, you'd be great at the steeplechase. And I'm like, what the heck? Isn't that for horses? You know, you have no idea what this event is. And it's a challenge. I mean, that first race of the season, we were usually in Miami for the Miami Invitational, and it's exhausting. It's completely exhausting. And by the time you get to, at the time, Rutgers was in the Big East, but the time you get to the Big East Championship and the NCAAs, you're more in shape for it. But I mean, it's five barriers for seven laps, and one of them is a water pit every time. So your feet are wet the second you start. And then you come home and you take your, you know, you get off the field and you're getting on the bus to go home wherever you are, and you're putting your wet cleats and wet socks in your backpack. And it's, just, you know, you get home like 8 hours later and your roommates are like, get those out of the room. They stink. You know, it's just, it's a special breed to run that race. But again, getting back to you guys doing it, I would applaud you if you tried. I would not encourage it. maybe lower the barrier a little bit, maybe make it like a foot off the ground.
Well, Catherine, I mean, I got to be honest about this. I challenge Ziggy to a 100-yard race, goalpost to goalpost on a football field, and he's the ex-pro athlete, and he's the one who's delaying this, who's saying no. So, I mean, it's funny he's trying to paint himself as the guy who wants to do the steeplechase when he doesn't even want to put one foot in front of the other. I mean, you know. Thanks so much.
When you compete all those years, he's retired now. He's ready to, you know.
Yes, exactly.
He's sitting and talking to you.
Thank you so much for doing this. We really appreciate it, and we hope we can have you on again, especially as our fingers are crossed, we get closer to the start of an actual NHL season.
Yeah, you got it, guys. Anytime. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.